The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. I was listening to the music as we came on, and it reminded me of Tuesday night. My office took a little retreat up to the Lucas Oil Stadium. We listened to Joan Jett, we listened to Poison, and yes, Def Leppard. And boy, it was funny. I was in the restroom, and I hear the music start, which is my intro music, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I run out, try to get back to my seat so I could hear the entire song. So definitely the right music for the right crowd. So all of you baby boomers that are listening to this program, used to be Elvis. If you remember when I first started doing this show 20 years ago, we played the Elvis intro music, which was the dun, 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 dun. Well, I was appealing, hopefully, to people my father's age, who are now 75. So we switched to the song that you now hear, yeah, to appeal to a little different crowd. So in the next few years, we may have to switch it to something else. I'm not real sure, but maybe we'll ride with this for the next 5 or 6 years, and then we'll see where it goes from there. I may move it to a country song because, you know, I've been saying a lot lately that I know a lot, I know a little about a lot and a lot about a little, and that's pretty much the story of my life. A lot about a little and a little about a lot. And that is a country song. All right, we're going to have a fun one today. I'm going to, though, not do News of the Week because I did a special edition inflation, whatever that they call it, the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed this week. Special edition on my podcast. And I basically went through all of the high points of where this thing started, where we ended up, and where it's likely to lead down the road. And whether you believe it's going to reduce inflation or not, which I do not personally, but you have to understand that when you have more spending, regardless of whether you think you can get it back through increased revenues, it's going to add to the debt. And when you add to the debt, it adds to the not just probability, not just possibility, but the certainty that tax rates will have to be up in the future. So when I gave the analogy that, you know, $1 equals 1 second, and I ran through the $1 million is 11 and a half days, and the $1 billion is 32 years, and $1 trillion is 32,000 years, that's putting years into dollars, and we're over $31 trillion going on to $31 trillion in debt, expected to add $1 trillion deficits for the next 10 years, then that's like a billion years. And I started thinking about a billion years. Like, what is that? Well, that's like they say the Earth was created like 4.6 billion years ago. That's what scientists estimated to be. And there were maybe dinosaurs and stuff like that a few billion years after that. And, or you know, so when you start thinking about it from that perspective, you're like, there's no way we're ever going to get out of this, right? There's no way we can tax or cut spending and get rid of this. This is an enormous number. So thankfully, as I'm recording this program today, I will be with Senator Todd Young tonight and hopeful Aaron Hushin tonight for the 9th congressional seat. And honestly, they can't do anything about it. But we're certainly going to try and talk about it. Where are we today? Where would we like to be in the future? And what are the possibilities of Medicare reform, Social Security reform, tax rates, like what's going on there, what's in the mindset of people and lawmakers. And right now I can tell you that without even talking to them, and this is on a Thursday when you're hearing this, if you hear it on Saturday, I might know a little bit more, that they have little appetite. And not just those two, but the entire House of Representatives and the Congress overall has no appetite to tackle this stuff because it's kind of like, well, you know, at this point, it's like a person just swimming in massive debt. Have you ever, you know, maybe you are one of them. Maybe you've met someone. They're like, there's no way out. I mean, there's no way out of this. I can't make enough money. I've already spent this money. I'm committed to it. It's on the credit cards, right? I can't do anything about it. So what do? You go up to Indianapolis in federal court and you stick your right hand up and you say, okay, it's over. I'm going bankrupt. And then you try to start over again. Is that where this thing ends? I don't know about that. I talked about how Jesus Christ walked this earth over 2,000 years ago. That's when he was around. He was around 33 years. I said, will it take the rapture for this debt to go away? Is that what's going to take to get rid of it? It just goes away because we're all gone? I don't know. But listen to the podcast. It's about 14 minutes long, and I go through a lot of math. And hopefully, you know, you learn something, and obviously it's designed to motivate you to do something about what you can control. And the only thing you personally can control, right, I've went through it a million times, is your retirement account and when you pay the tax on that. You can choose to pay it off now or over the next few years, or you can wait, roll the dice, and hope that tax rates are lower when you take the money out. And we know where I stand on this. I've obviously started as a huge fan of David McKnight's The Power of Zero, best-selling author. And then we turn around and back that up with 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win, all around the expiration of the tax cuts in 2025. Of course, an Amazon daily bestseller as well. So get it, read it, act on it, all right? So listen, I'm going to get into a few things that not all of you have to think about. So I get into the idea in the next segment of Why would you need to plan for that day where you are required to take out distributions from a retirement account? And what if you're required to take those out when the market's down? So the question is, do I need to plan? Yes. How do you do it? That's what we're going to tackle. When I come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for being with me. If you miss any of the program, of course, you can hear it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., which many of you will be listening as you head over to the farmer's market or something else fun this weekend. Of course, always on WGCLradio.com. And after the Tuesday night airing, yes, you can hear it through your favorite podcast channel, whether that's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. I mean, it's all over the place. You can find it. Just look it up. Play it, subscribe, whatever you want to do. Make a little reminder that it will pop up, boom, on your phone, and you can press it, new episode available, and listen. So after 20 years of content, we actually have moved our way up to not the top. I don't think we'll ever be there. I mean, that's not our purpose of this program necessarily, but it's certainly easier to find than it was a few years ago. So the narrative, right, that you put your money away into an account, retirement account, tax deferred, get that little, you know, feeling of satisfaction with that tax deduction today. Your money grows tax deferred, which means you'll pay it later, and then you take it out in retirement and you pay tax. But some of you are like, you know, I'm okay living on my Social Security and a little bit of a pension or whatever. I really don't need my IRA, my 401k. Well, there's going to be a day of reckoning, and the IRS says this is the day you have to take it out. It used to be 70 and a half. It moved to 72. Proposed to move to 75. So I don't know when it's all going to settle in and where it's going to end up. But the idea is that you will have to take it out at some point. Now, how much? It's kind of based on, you know, whatever the age you are and what the IRS says. Right now, you don't need to say if you're 72, it's about 27 years. You divide it over 27 years, and that's what you take out. You recalculate it every year. But here's the thing. When you have to do something, right, it in the required minimum distribution is forced upon you. It's forced income. You have to take it in cash. You have to sell something to take it in cash. And then it comes in cash. If you don't want it, then you reinvest it. Well, as you all know, a lot can happen in a couple of days, right? Money moves fast. Markets move fast. So you don't want to sell when something's low. That's what we call sequence of return risk. So if you sell, let's say you needed 5% out and the market's down 10, that's like taking out minus 15. Then if you turn around and try to get it quickly reinvested, what if the market moved like it has in the last several weeks, sometimes 3 to 4% in one day? and then you try to jump back in, right? So that timing risk is what you want to avoid. So just like if you're taking retirement income by choice, that you should structure it even if it's not by choice, if it's forced upon you, like a required distribution. So what do I mean by that? If I know that I have to take required distributions starting 3 or 4 years out, I should really start to layer my investments as my RMD bucket, right? We create all kinds of buckets, buckets for healthcare, buckets for education, buckets for weddings that we have to pay for, buckets for my retirement income. Well, why not have one for RMDs? You should. So what does that mean? What does that look like? Well, let's say for the next, 3 years from now and the next 10, I want to make sure that I'm not a forced seller on my RMD. So you want to put a bucket of safe, secure investments together. And that can be a variety of things. We've discussed many of them on the show, from laddered bonds to fixed annuities to whatever it might be, to provide that assurance, right? It's not insurance in many cases, it's assurance. Doug and I went through that last week. But it gives you some feel good that, hey, if the market's down 20 or 30%, I'm not forced to sell to get that money out. So it is really important to plan for RMDs, not just from a tax perspective, like how much am I going to have to take? What's this going to look like down the road? Runaway RMDs, I call them. You might want to force some income up earlier before RMD age. What kind of money am I giving to charities? Keep that, in your what you call the QCD bucket. That should be another bucket of money that's also not going to be wildly affected by markets. And then everything else can go in the later bucket, right, for long-term growth. The cool thing about Roth conversions, however, is they can be done with the security itself. So if you look at your portfolio and it's down 10% and you converted it to a Roth, you can convert the same stuff you own. You don't have to sell anything over to a Roth. Then it's in the Roth. You paid the tax on whatever that fair market value was on the day you did it. Then if the market returns, and it will, all of that is tax-free. So let's say you paid 22% federal tax and the market's down 10 and it recovered pretty quickly. Well, you just got 10 of your 22 back within maybe a year or less. And then the next year, maybe it's up 12. Boom. All of your tax money was returned to you by just market performance. And then the next many, many, many years is all gravy. It's all tax-free. You pass away, it goes to kids, it's tax-free. They get to keep it around for 10 years, it's tax-free. I did a podcast on multi-generational Roth money and how a small amount of money can turn into millions and millions tax-free if it's set up correctly. Now, most of the time when we talk about markets being down, we're talking about stocks, right? That's easy because everyone knows stocks go up and down, up and down. But this is the first time in my 28-year career that it's made sense to actually convert bonds. Yes, the bond market is down as much as the stock market. In fact, in many indices, more. It's crazy. It's down about like 10%. So I looked at a bond portfolio the other day. Now, granted, it had individual bonds, so I knew exactly the face amount. I knew exactly the interest rate, the maturity dates. But on average, if the whole basket of bonds was down over 10%. But we know contractually they will return back to their par value over the next around seven years in this case. So why not convert the bonds? Convert them over. And I think it'll happen quicker than that because I believe, and so does Rod, he'll be on next, that interest rates will roll over again probably in the next couple of years and start to come back down. Why will that happen? Well, when you have an economy that slows and the Fed is determined to make that happen, then interest rates decline because interest rates decline based on future expectations of growth. And then guess what? Your bond values will go up. So I think that your bond values could potentially return to where they are, not just with interest backfilling, that happens naturally, but with the actual values as rates turn over maybe in 2024, 2025. And you would then be able to potentially sell out of those if you wanted to and move into what I think you should do in most cases and have growth in your Roth, unless you plan to use it early. And there's reasons for that, right? I did a podcast on that, how to keep your pre-Medicare premiums very, very low by using Roth money. But in most cases, people tend to put their Roth money at, full throttle, risk on, because that's multi-generational stuff, right? But this is the first chance that I've seen in my entire career, because we've been in this 30-year bull market with fixed income, that you have a chance to convert bonds even at these low prices to then see it recover contractually, right? So even like this year, starting in April, May, then June and July, big time, was conversions months for us. We did tons of Roth conversions in our office in April, May, June, and July. Now, it's a lot of work, don't get me wrong. It's a very manual process, but it is very, very satisfying when you're able to transfer over an equity portfolio that might be down, you know, 15%, and you look today and it's down like 4%, and you can say to yourself, man, that was a great move, right? But you have to be on top of things or have someone that's on top of it for you, because that's not always easy to understand or know when the right time to do something is. But again, in my book, I wrote about this, like what is the rule of thumb when it comes to Roth conversions? Values down 10 plus more negative, or by the end of the year, whichever comes first. Well, now this year you've had an opportunity both on the bond market and stock market to do a Roth conversion with asset prices lower. Stocks have been making somewhat of a recovery, starting to kind of throttle around a little bit now, but you know, pretty good run of late. Bond market still suffering, although rates are starting to come down a little bit, believe it or not, and the values have come up. But just don't ever waste a good crisis, as they say, or a good bad market. Is that a double negative, whatever that means? But a good bad market gives you opportunity. People say, oh, you have opportunities to buy. Well, that's if you have cash. Most people are already all in, so they don't really have that extra cash, and nor do they ever want to put the money in. When the market's down, it's like the last thing I want to do is put my money in, right? But that's probably the best thing you can do. It's a mentality. It's a mindset. But do something that's meaningful. Do a Roth conversion. Pay the tax now. Boom. It's over. And it's done. All right. So before we get Rod on. So, you know, we think about life insurance differently at different ages and stages of life. So I was going to talk with you a little bit about why a person should consider owning some life insurance, even into retirement, even when they're out of debt, even when they don't have to worry about, you know, putting kids through school or the fact that they need to self-complete a plan like retirement or some other plan. But what would you use it for, right? Especially now, I'm 60, 65 years old. Why would I want to even consider owning life insurance at this point? I'm going to give you a couple of thoughts to put in your mind that I think might make you think a little bit different. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Appreciate you hanging out with me. Rod will be on next, Hot Rod, to talk about where we stand on things today and why we're seeing a few cracks in the economy and what does that mean for you. That'll be next. But right now, let's talk about something that came up this past week with a person that had plenty of money, right? They don't have any debt. They have a pension. They have Social Security going to come in, bunch of money in their retirement account. Just in a, kids are raised, grandkids have already arrived. I mean, just in a fantastic spot. They're getting ready to retire. And, you know, and we've talked about, like, what do you do with this money? Like, they don't really need the money because they have plenty of other cash flow coming in, which is, you know, you might be thinking, who gets to that point? Well, these folks did, and they love to camp, and they like to hang out and do things that, you know, ordinary everyday people do, but they just happen to be in a fantastic financial situation. Well, so we started talking about long-term care. And how a long-term care illness might be the only thing that could disrupt their situation. And we don't know when it will occur. We don't know if it will occur. We don't even know how much it will cost when it happens, right? Because there are all kinds of different care. You might need a few days a week with someone in your house. You might need 24-hour care. You may need to go into a facility, an assisted living or a full care facility. You never know. And the cost of all that's so much different than it is, you know, staying home versus being in a facility. So the question is, do you need it? Well, you could self-insure, and I've illustrated that to them. If this happened, then this is what would likely be the case. And they were kind of okay with that. But then I'm like, you know what? You've got some money to sit in the bank. You got 200 grand sitting in the bank. What are you going to do with that? Nothing. All right. Why don't you think about finding a better place to put the money? Is the answer, you know, yes, you want to do that or no? Well, in their case, it was yes. Well, in this case, we were able to find what they call an index universal life that has some kind of a guaranteed interest rate, but also the index credits would be tied to the market, really good history on it, no penalties for taking your money out if you want it, And we said, why don't we dump it into this thing? Well, for that, $200,000, actually it was $150,000 by the time we had the discussion between the two of them, they were able to each have about $200,000 of death benefit. And it's projected to grow until they're age 86 to around $500,000 of death benefit. But it's not just death benefit. It's also a chronic illness, critical illness benefit. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means, you know, if you had, you know, if your death was just around the corner, that you could access the money sooner than that, than death. If you had a long-term care illness, like a cognitive issue or two of your six activities of daily living you can't perform, that's like transferring, bathing, eating, then you can go on claim. And up to 2% a month of that death benefit can be accelerated and sent to your mailbox or to your checking account, whatever, your virtual mailbox, your checking account. And that can be used for whatever you want. Some people are like, well, what about, you know, paying for that? Yes. What about paying for that? Yes. You can pay for anything. You can pay for, you can pay, you know, it doesn't matter. You can use it for anything you want. That's what I have. That's what I always suggest my clients take because, listen, you've got a one-on-one chance of dying, right? So if you never use it for long-term care, then it's going to go tax-free to your family. Now, what can the proceeds be used for at that point? A lot of things. People think final expenses, blah, blah, blah. But what about paying taxes on something? You know, maybe they still leave this multi-million dollar retirement account behind. It goes to the kids and has not been properly converted to a Roth over a period of time. They'll have to pay taxes on it, probably in their peak earning years. Well, what better to pay taxes than tax-free money? You can even restrict how benefits are paid to beneficiaries if you want without having some elaborate, hard to get someone to manage trust. That's kind of cool, right? Okay, I don't need it for long-term care, but if I, you know I'm going to die and it's going to be tax-free money to my heirs of, you know, $1 million, $500,000 each. But you know what? I want to control how they get that money. It's all tax-free. How can you do that? Well, many of these life insurance contracts or annuity contracts have restricted beneficiary arrangements. So just thinking outside the box. Yeah, you might think you don't need something, and maybe you don't, but maybe you want it. Do you have lazy dollars in the bank? Is there a better place for it to grow as an investment first? If the answer is yes, then, oh, by the way, if I qualify, I can also get these additional benefits. You can run the internal rate of return on the cash versus sitting in the bank. That's always going to beat it. Almost always, right? I guess if you have some crazy thing happen over a long period of time, it may not. But nonetheless, it usually beats the cash sitting in the bank. And then if you run an internal rate of return on the benefit, it like blows it out of the water. So if you need it now or in 20 years from now, it's always going to beat what you're going to get just sitting in the bank when you look at the internal rate of return on the actual benefit. So once again, I mean, those are some complicated things, right? But they're really not. They're super easy, and I always say that it's easier to get into things than out of things, which is generally true, but if structured properly and the commissions and fees and all that associated with the insurance contract are placed aside, you can actually get into a really attractive contract without penalties, without any strings attached, so you can get into something as easily as you got out of it. In fact, it was harder to get in because you had to qualify than it is to get it out, which is the reverse of what I just said before. So that's kind of cool. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's get Hot Rod on the phone. How have the markets been doing? And what are the cracks that we're starting to see in the economy? And what does that mean for the markets? And more importantly, you. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So I mentioned I went to a concert this week. A lot of folks from the office went. Hot Rod did not go to see Joan Jett. Poison with Bret Michaels, which was outstanding. Def Leppard and Motley Crue. It was a concert, Rod, that basically identified the majority of our client base because there were a lot of them there. It was an age bracket that grew up listening to that kind of music. And I was joking earlier when we started the program that our intro music to the show is, of course, of that era. And when I first started doing this program, it was Elvis music that we used to start the show, if you recall that. So we were trying to appeal to people more my father's age, And now we're obviously dealing with more people in that baby boom age. So it is all about where people are in life and what kind of messaging that you want to deliver. And Rod, I know you've been delivering a message on Glasses Show and, of course, here on Your Money with David Hayes, week in and week out, as we've been through a pretty nutso year. And here we are smack dab in the middle of August, and we are definitely starting to see some cracks in the economy. The market was on a tear for a bit. It seems to be settling in a little bit now. But kind of where are we on things right now? We just saw the UK crack about 10% inflation. That was their number that was reported. We're sitting at around 8.5%. You know, we have cracks. We have the Fed that continues to push. Market seemed to ignore it for a while. Now maybe it's seeming to wake up to it a little bit. We're in the middle of earnings season. I mean, there is so much going on. But thankfully, Hot Rod, our hands are tightly on the wheel.
Yeah, most certainly. So I think in the very short run, regardless of the future from a standpoint of economic, interest rates, inflation, the three things that obviously will drive the longer-term performance, in the short run, we've made up a whole lot of ground off of that sell-off in a very short amount of time. So short-run indicators would tell you that you are slightly overbought. Now, you can trade sideways and let things catch up to you, or you can correct and go down a little bit to get there. So in the very short term, I'm not surprised by a little bit of weakness we've seen so far this week due to those elevated relative strength indicators, looking at some of the other moving averages and how far above we've gotten through them and broke right through them without much resistance. 200-day is the last one that we're approaching, and that seems to be the level that the market is also having a little more difficulty getting through, while at the same time accepting that in the very near term we're slightly overbought. As you pull back and start to look out a little bit further, that's where we still have some worries and concerns. I'm not fully understanding the consistency in which the market and market pundits hear that the Fed is talking pause.
Mm-hmm.
So the last two times the Fed has spoke at the rate meeting, and then this earlier this week, the market is reacting as though the Fed is telling us that they're going to pause. Matter of fact, somebody that we have always kind of followed fairly closely, I say a little less closely in the last few years because we have felt as though his market predictions have been a little bit wild and erratic, and they seem to change day to day. Scott Minard, I read a blurb from him today that basically said he dug into the minutes, and yep, he found in the minutes what he thought he heard in the live press conference, which is a pause. Why do, I don't hear that, because what the Fed and the board and the Fed presidents continue to tell us, we're going to keep fighting inflation until inflation comes down to a much more reasonable level. Now, I think some of the assumptions that are going on within the market and some of the pundits is that because we've seen a big drop in commodities, that means we have a big drop across the board in inflation. And that's just not true. At this point, the Fed even acknowledged that, yes, commodities have had a big drawdown from their peak, but so far that's not affecting everything else because we're experiencing inflation in basically every area within the economy. So it wasn't isolated only to, you know, construction where some of those commodity prices going down would alleviate the inflationary pressures. It's not just in oil and energy. It's across the board. So if those are the only couple of components that have alleviated the high inflation, well, then we haven't conquered inflation as a whole. The other thing that I have cautioned on is that let's not jump too soon to assume or feel confident that we know definitively that inflation has peaked. If the biggest driving force behind our last inflationary number dropping from 9.1 to 8.5 was a drop in energy prices, well, that's a volatile commodity that could most certainly spike right back up. And especially if China's economy would start to kick it again, which they are running way below what they want to, which is why they came out and their federal bank cut rates to stimulate their economy. Now, part of the problem in China's economy is the no COVID policy. And anytime someone has COVID, they kind of lock down that whole area. But if they can get beyond that and they can begin to stimulate the economy, they have a huge appetite for oil and gasoline and diesel fuel that will most certainly increase demand while supply is not dramatically going up. So we could see a spike in inflation come back just from that exclusively. By no means is it my prediction, but I am just basically saying we cannot assume that this inflation fight has been won and it is over at this stage.
You know, it's funny because you talk about Minard. You could dig into these minutes deep, 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 and it's almost like reading a Bible verse. You can interpret it to fit whatever narrative you want to fit. And that's the way I think Minard and others are just so hopeful, right, that the Fed's going to pause. Let's talk about retail, because retail sales came out on Wednesday. Thursday, we had jobless claims, existing home sales, index of leading indicators, different variety. But we talked about mortgage applications way, way down. We've talked about subscriptions being canceled because consumers are starting to change their buying habits. And we had Walmart say they're starting to see that. We saw Target saying different things. Certainly not the Target here in Bloomington. They're not changing any buying habits out here as the students return. Don't go there if you just want to get a prescription or something. It's a zoo out there. But, Rod, I mean, we are starting to see cracks in the consumer just as they've shifted spending habits. Many of these retailers do believe the consumer will stay strong through the end of the year, into the holiday season. But that's always a really, really good indicator of what's going to happen. We had our Terminix guy came in this week for our bug spray and said that he had the most cancellations that they've ever seen because people, when given the opportunity to say why we canceled, it was because we had to cut back on something, and bug spraying was obviously not a necessity, so they cut it back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing that concerns me, is we're seeing it in little pockets here and there. It's not enough that it's showing up in the monthly national economic data that gets reported and everybody looks at, or even in the quarterly earnings. Although I think if you listen to the conference call with the retailers, you would hear them talk cautiously about the future. So most of their earnings side of things came in fairly well. You know, Walmart's one of those interesting stories. About 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, they guided estimates down, and the analysts came in and obliged and pushed estimates down. And then Walmart reports, and lo and behold, they come in exactly where the estimates were before they encouraged the analysts to push them down, and they hit that number. So on the surface, it looks like they did well because they beat on the top and bottom line. But of course, it was lowered numbers that they came in and beat. But it's not as important what has happened to the consumer over the last quarter. It's more important what's going to happen with the consumer as we move forward. And that is where I heard some areas of concern. Walmart, Target, both of them alluded to they're starting to have building inventories. They've got to make way for holiday sales. They do believe holiday will still be strong, predominantly because of just the nature of getting together with family and the good feel good spirit of the holiday season, and all of that will probably be fairly good. But that doesn't mean that outside of spending on holiday that the consumer is going to do a lot of excess spending above and beyond that. And then what do the retailers do with the inventory glut? Well, eventually they've got to do discounts and markdowns. Well, most of them don't have very high margins. So if they start discounting products that they're selling, that eats into their margins, which eats into that earnings per share number that you're going to get in the future. But in addition to some of the cracks that you've talked about, Dave, we continue to see rising credit card debt on a month-on-month basis. We have consistently, on a weekly basis, I think running 4 weeks consecutive now, had slight uptick in jobless claims coming in. So the numbers aren't at elevated levels to where you'd be concerned, but you're beginning to start a trend in some of these things. Defaults is another one. Defaults are still extremely low, but when you look at them on a chart and you've got this long downward slope, it now has an up curl to it on the very end of it. So it isn't high yet, but it is starting to trend in the wrong direction. And those are the things that I think that we have to be aware of, and don't ignore, and don't just automatically wait to see it in the broad national numbers and then be completely taken by surprise that, oh my gosh, how did that happen? this wasn't showing up in the national numbers. You're getting little bits and pieces that are telling you that the consumer may be a little more stretched than what we think he is. And then I think if you begin to see a rapid uptick in jobless claims and then a growth in unemployment, that's when you potentially start to see those delinquencies start to grow when people no longer have their jobs. And let's be honest, the only way the Fed can truthfully fight disinflation is for unemployment to start going up, because one of the big driving forces behind this, outside of some of the products, rents going up, groceries going up, it's wage. And it's wage inflation, and the wage inflation is there because we have an extremely tight labor market. And I just don't see how the Fed can win this inflation battle and keep unemployment under 4. Now, that's not their main objective, that they want unemployment to be over 4 or at 5. They don't want to put anybody out of a job. It's just the reality that as long as people have money and they continue to spend and there is more demand than there are products and services, that's inflationary. Of course, the other component to it is that isn't helping anything is Washington, D.C. is completely clueless as to what creates inflation, how you fight inflation. So they're just continuing to open up the purse book of Washington, D.C. and spend. Whether it's good things to spend it on or not isn't the point I'm making. The point is government spending and taxation and overregulation most certainly have a huge impact on inflation. It may not be exclusive, but it is a very big influence on inflation, and they're acting as though it has absolutely nothing to do with it. This is completely 100% COVID lockdown, supply chain issues, and Putin. And while they added to it, they most certainly are not the only thing responsible for it.
I love the way you say Putin. All right, Hot Rod, thanks for being with us. Of course, you can hear Rod on Monday and Big Show Friday with Glass in the Afternoon. Rod, I'll see you later.
Sounds good. Have a great show, Dave.
Let's take a quick break, guys. We're running out of time. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Oh, Rod, I can almost see him at the office when he calls in, arms flailing, heads thrown back. He gets fired up. Thanks for Rod being so passionate about what he does. We appreciate that a lot. Hey, I've had a lot of people retiring. They're kind of rethinking like what retirement should look like. And I have really been excited to help coach people with their mindset. You know, you have a will set, skill set, and that's the mindset that overwhelms everything else. Of course, we've had Jerry Sedler on our show, which I contacted her this past week. We're going to have her back on soon. On the book, Don't Retire But Rewire, but I actually came across a phrase from a client of mine that I liked even better, is don't retire, refire, right? Fire back up, fire yourself up, get excited. What does retirement look like to you? What's your significant other think? Are they on the same page? You know, where are we going to get those attaboys? So it's going to be a lot of fun to really help people redefine their working lives into their retirement lives. And it definitely takes a refire. And you can be fired up about not having to set your alarm to get up on Monday morning. But, you know, there's a whole different mindset to how to have a great retirement, a fulfilling retirement, how to relax when you want to relax, serve when you want to serve, do the things you want to do to make a difference in this life. So refiring your life in retirement is so much more important than just simply rewiring. So we're going to do some things on that. I have got a client that I just ran into the other day working at Dick's Sporting Goods. You know, he's out there. I'm like, hey, I love being around people, you know, it gives me something to do and gives me a discount on my golf stuff. And, you know, it's almost like the guy that's captaining the ship at Disney World. You get to talking to those dudes, man, they are having a great retirement. They don't have to be out there running these ships back and forth from, you know, the Wilderness Lodge over to wherever. They're there because they want to. Maybe you want to work at a women's clothing store, maybe a knickknack store, you know, just do something to get around people and help solve problems and make a difference. It's a lot of fun helping people kind of get their mindset right for retirement. So yeah, let's not retire and then rewire. Let's refire, right? Let's refire. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, let me take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this program. It is, yes, Your Money with David Hayes. So I pulled out a list of people that have been on this program in the past, because, you know, I could promise you around halfway we would start getting some people on. We had Jeffrey Levine on, which was a great show. If you didn't get to check that out, you can go back in the archives and listen to that. I've known Jeffrey forever, did a great job. I'm going to have Ed Slott on again sometime soon. But really going through, I had Pete the Planner on in the past. I've had Tom Hegna on in the past. But one of my all-time favorites is my good friend Mary Beth Franklin. Of course, she was the senior editor of Kiplinger Magazine for many, many years. I met her at a dinner. She was a keynote speaker at an Ed Slott event. And I didn't know who she was. This was years ago, 15 years ago. I'm sitting down having dinner the evening before our little welcome event, and I'm just talking with her, and I'm like, what do you do? She's like, I'm the keynote speaker. So that's how I met her and realized she was the senior editor of Kiplinger and really the pioneer of educating financial advisors on Social Security claiming strategies and maximizing Social Security. She left that day, and our heads were spinning. We're like, we have got to tell people about this. Well, she was so good that I believe she single-handedly taught so many people how to take advantage of the claiming strategies that they shut down all of the claiming strategies. Not all of them, but most of them. I reached out to Mary Beth. It had been a while, so she's going to be on vacation, but I believe September 1st, she will be on the show, so excited about having her back on. And she's got some new stuff, man, some good stuff. We'll go back and rehash some old things that still work and also some new things you need to think about. So when it comes to Social Security, Medicare, and a few other things, she is by far the best. She's currently a contributing editor for Investment News and has been for some time. But she's basically living the life. This winter, she'll be in Colorado skiing. You know, she's writing articles from wherever she is in the world. And I don't know where she'll be exactly. She lives in Baltimore. I'm not sure if she'll be in Baltimore when she calls in the program or not. But we'll certainly find out. And it was cool because I went back to 2007, pulled out the Kiplinger where my dad was featured when Mary Beth used to ask me for ideas on articles. And I would give her ideas, and she would take me up on them. So we've had several clients that were featured in Kiplinger over the years when she was there. And my dad was the late boomers guide to retirement. So he's basically what they consider a late baby boomer. I would call him an early baby boomer because he was born in the 40s, late 40s, which makes him one of the very first. And he's 75 this year. So he is at the very tip of that massive iceberg of baby boomers making their way through the system. People born from 1957 to 61, that's the peak. Born 1957, that puts you square at 65 right now, which means over 11,500 people a day over the next 4.5 years will be turning 65. That's a massive, massive amount of people, a massive strain on Social Security, a massive strain on Medicare. And those are all the things that we're going to have to figure out and fix, because this thing's not going to go away anytime soon. The problems that we're facing, the funding that we're facing, and the longer we wait, the bigger the problem becomes. So I'm excited to get to spend some time with Todd Young and Aaron Hooshin this evening on this Thursday. I'm actually recording the show in the afternoon to be able to do this event and just see what's the mindset of these legislators. What's going to happen here over the next few years? And then I'll bring that information to you. Hope you had a good time listening to the show. I'll talk to you again next week, everyone. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.